Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Gwen Macsai.
I have to say that the people of Illinois were really excited about the impending birth. Somehow this became the state's baby, a phrase which irritated Jay no end. I mean, sometimes you say, well, why don't they deliver it, carry it and deliver it?
Illinois politics aficionados might recognize that voice. That's our state's longest-serving governor, Big Jim Thompson, talking about the birth of his daughter, Samantha. For years, the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield has been recording interviews with Illinois figures like Thompson for the museum's Oral Histories Project. The library recently recorded its 1,000th interview, all of which are available online for anyone to listen to. We'll have the link to the collection up on our website, but in the meantime, I'm joined on the line now by Mark Depew. He's Director of Oral History for the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. Mark, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for coming.
Well, thanks for having me, Gwen.
So we're going to be playing a few clips, but before we do that, can you just tell us a little bit about how this project got started?
Back in 2006, the museum, library museum, had only been open for a year. And when they were planning the staffing documents, they said, you know what would be neat is to have an oral historian. Well, you know, Abraham Lincoln had been dead for a long time, but really the library side of the complex is the old Illinois State Historical Library. So it made perfect sense to have an oral historian collecting the history of this great state. And boy, is there plenty of history to collect. And top priorities for us is Illinois statecraft, which is a nice way of saying politics, and lots of veterans interviews and agriculture, and we've got plenty more beyond that as well.
Yeah. In fact, there's sports, education, and even architecture. So how do you decide who you want to interview, who you don't want to interview, and who to include in the collection?
Well, we always look at the most prominent state-level politicians. So I have huge projects that deal with Governor Thompson's administration, with Governor Edgar's administration, a smaller collection for Governor Dan Walker, and I'm currently just getting started with Governor Pat Quinn. And in those cases, it's not just the governor, it's the political advisors, it's the chief of staff, press secretary, it's opponents in the gubernatorial races, things like that. For the veterans, I just kind of pay attention to what's going on, and you pick them up in the newspaper, or inevitably, people find out you're doing this, and hey, you need to interview him, or she's got a great story. That's basically how it works, but it's a little bit of all of the above, quite frankly.
Mm. And there are hours and hours of interviews in the collection, but we did ask you to pick some of your favorite moments for us today. So let's listen to one. I'll play it first, and then maybe you can give us some context. This is Maybelle Blair remembering the VJ Day celebration after World War II in the summer of 1945.
You remember the celebration at the end of World War II?
Oh, my gosh, yes, I do. I was, a teenager, and I can remember, it was wonderful. You have never seen anything like it. I wound up downtown Los Angeles. I can't remember why. And everybody was screaming and hollering and celebration that you wouldn't believe, guns shooting in the air, noises, screaming, hollering, crying with joy. It was everything.
Maybelle, did you get kissed that day?
You better believe I did. And I was so happy the sailors is around, you know, and they're just kissing me all over the place. I was just like, woo!
So, Mark, who is Maybelle, and why did you want her to be part of the collection?
She's this young girl growing up in Los Angeles, and then after that, she gets involved with the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. And if you can't listen to that interview and have a little bit of smile or laughing yourself, I just don't know that you're listening too well. It's a great clip, I think.
Oh, agreed. And that's the beauty of these oral histories, is that you get to hear the drama of the human voice. It just brings all pieces of history so alive. And the next clip has to do with the Rural Electrification Act. Can you just give us some context about that time period and why that was so significant to Illinois farmers?
Well, if you can imagine what life was like before they had electricity, and I'm interviewing Orion Samuelson, who is a name and a voice that many of your listeners might be familiar with because he's been on WGN radio for over 50 years. He's the voice of agriculture. He is very well known, but he grew up in Wisconsin on a dairy farm. And before electricity, he has to do that by hand. And after electricity, he gets to use a milking machine. And not only that, but you can turn the switch on and have lights when you wake up in the morning.
Okay, so let's listen to this clip.
As I tell people today, there are certain dates in our life that are important, birthdays, wedding anniversaries, but for me an important day was April 11th, 1948. That's the day that the Rural Electric Co-op came to our farm and hooked us up to electricity. And it literally changed our life, literally. My mother threw away these heavy flat irons that she'd used to iron. We got a refrigerator, no longer had to put perishables in the basket at the end of the rope in the cistern. I was able to stand at the foot of the stairs, flick a switch, and there was light in the upstairs bedroom. I think the rural electric co-ops that brought power to rural America probably brought the biggest cultural change in the history of rural America.
Mark, something else about this collection that seems that it would be super useful is as a classroom resource. Are you hoping that teachers will be able to use this in the classroom?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things we've done is to go through our collection and develop, I think it's 8 now, lesson plans. We call them teacher resources. And hopefully the teachers can find these, and we find the gems that we've got in each one of the teacher resources. It includes several excerpts like the ones that you're listening here, but one of the topics is the ERA fight in Illinois. Another one is Truman's decision to use the atomic bomb. We have one we're in the process of getting up, which is a video tour of the Lincoln home, which is kind of a neat thing. But yeah, we would love to have teachers use this more. In fact, the latest one we just did add was basically a tutorial that the teacher can use, show a 30-minute film of me talking about how to do an interview, and then turn their students loose and go out and do their own interviews.
Oh, that's got to bring back some good tape, I would imagine. If you're just tuning in, my guest is Mark DePew. He's director of oral history for the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library Museum in Springfield. He's been telling us more about the museum's oral histories collection, which contains hundreds of hours of interviews with Illinois figures. Let's listen to another piece of tape. This is Patrick Lamb. He was just a kid when he came to America with his family from Vietnam. And here's what he had to say.
We had to make a decision at that time, jump off or stay and continue with that boat. So the final decision was for the 12 members of my family to jump into the water. And I remember the whole image, how they spray out this white chemical to keep the fish away. They call those swordfish, and they were big. We saw it later after we got on the oil rig. But we were bouncing that water. The oil rig didn't lower the basket to rescue us until our boat were out of sight. After the boat, our boat got out of sight, then they lowered this big crane. It was like a basket, you know, catching people or supplies, to lower it down the water, and then we all hop onto it. And they lifted us up, and then we were on board this oil rig. And we were so happy, you know, my aunt and uncle were in tears. And my first impression was, we're at least out of the water. They gave us blankets, and they brought us apples and eggs, which I couldn't eat the eggs, because after being at sea for a while, you couldn't get anything heavy inside. But the apple was delicious. I've never had an apple growing up in Vietnam. This was the first time, you know, looking at this apple and wow, look at this fruit. And I kept it and just ate it slowly at a time for the whole night we were there.
That's quite a dramatic story. Do you know anything more about Patrick Lamb and how he came to be in part of the collection?
Yeah, in fact, this is one of the benefits of my job. I've gotten to know Patrick very well. He lives in the Springfield area. He managed to get the entire family over. But imagine I think he was 7 years old at the time this was going on, and his family is making the decision to be leaving Ho Chi Minh City because his father had been killed. His father was an advisor for the American Army, was killed when Patrick was just 2 years old. And now his mother has got several children, and she has no future in Ho Chi Minh City, and decides to take the ultimate chance of sending Patrick with his aunts and uncles, while the rest of the family stays back in Ho Chi Minh City with the hope that maybe there's a 50% chance that he will survive and get to the United States and then get the rest of the family back to the United States. And it took a while to do that, but they did finally get the rest of the family to the United States.
Oh, that's a happy ending. I'm glad to hear that. The Oral History Project, you've already reached 1,000 interviews. Politicians, soldiers, educators, and activists. So is the one that got away? Who are the ones that you would really like to speak to that you haven't yet?
Well, there's always some veterans that you would have liked to get. I would have loved to have the chance to do a Tuskegee Airman, and I just wasn't paying close enough attention when we got started. Most of those folks are passed away, but the politician I really regret not getting would have been Judy Barr Topinka. For some of your listeners, they'll remember she was a very colorful person in Illinois politics and wasn't bashful about talking and saying what was on her mind. And she had some critical moments. She was involved in the 2004, she was Republican Party chairwoman at the time. And that was the time when the Republicans were suddenly finding themselves without a Senate candidate to run against Barack Obama. And I would have loved to find her story on that one and how they ended up going all the way to Maryland and getting Alan Keyes, who of course got destroyed by Obama in that particular election. That would have been a great story to add.
And what is next for the project? I mean, this is going to be ongoing, I assume, in perpetuity?
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, eventually I'm going to retire, but we'll get somebody else in the seat. There's always something in Illinois politics, and I mentioned that...
Well, that is for sure.
Pat Quinn is the current target. I've already started. I've had a couple sessions with him, but there's so much to talk about with him. I mean, he got started back in the 70s in his political career, but he doesn't know yet, but I'm certainly hoping to get Senator John Culleton and Senator Redonio, since she just recently retired as well, get some more of the legislators. We always, in the politics side, we always try to keep the focus on state-level politics and not the national level, but more veterans, more religious leaders, more in the architectural project. We'll keep plenty busy.
I noticed you didn't mention Blagojevich.
There is some talk. My boss would like to have me do that interview, and maybe as my swan song when I'm about ready to retire, I can run out to Colorado, and I don't know if he'd be willing to talk to me or not. But
my guess is that if you're interested in talking to him, he's interested in talking to you.
Yeah, but you know, always in my back of my mind says, well, you know, how much is it going to be fact, and how much is just going to be his interpretation of what happened? But even that, you know, it'd be great fun to do it, wouldn't it?
Oh, completely. Absolutely. So how are people going to access this? Can they just go to your website, listen to the interviews? How can we find them?
Yeah, the website address, we try to keep it simple, www.oralhistory.illinois.gov. That's the quickest way to find it. You'll get there, and that's the main page. And then you'll see the list of the various projects we got. And you click on one of those projects. And when you eventually get to a particular interview you want, you're going to find all of the audio. Or in many cases, we've got video for these as well. Lots of pictures for most of the interviews we've got. And when we finally get around to being able to finish and make sure we've got a good transcript, we post that up as well. So there's 1,000 interviews, there's thousands of photos, there's close to 3,000 hours of interview that we've all got posted on the webpage.
That's Mark DePew. He's Director of Oral History for the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield. He's been telling us more about the thousands of interviews with Illinois figures that the museum has. As we've been hearing, these interviews are online and available to the public. We will also tweet out more information on the collection. You can find us at 21stshow on Twitter. Mark, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for taking the time, Gwen.
That's it for us today. We're produced by Libby Foster, Anna Casey, and Julian Haida. Eunice Alpasan is our intern. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Gwen Maxey. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media.